Acts chapter 24. I want to make a note or two about Felix that I think you will find somewhat interesting. You'll note in the latter part of that chapter that the Apostle Paul is making his defense before Felix and Drusilla. We've talked about who they were, and we've talked about the corruptness of Felix. We've talked about the role that Felix had as a Roman governor to keep peace among the people of the Jews, particularly in the land of Palestine and so forth. And so what we want to note about Felix is that he was a very corrupt man. We've talked about that in some detail. And we have noted that the subject matter that the Apostle Paul is dealing with is absolutely appropriate for both Felix and Drusilla. Adulterers, evil people, corrupt politically, and just a whole bunch of bad things. And we notice in verse 25 that Paul reasoned of righteousness and self-control and the judgment to come. Now, we talked about those three elements to some degree, and we noted the response of Felix. It tells us that Felix was terrified and answered, "Go thy way for this time, and when I have a convenient season, I will call thee unto me." He hoped with all that money would be given him of Paul, wherefore also he sent for him the oftener and communed with him. Now, we talked about all of that, but the point I want you to note in particular is found in verse 27, where it tells us, "But when 2 years were fulfilled, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus, and desiring to gain favor with the Jews, Felix left Paul in bonds." Now, we're going to notice a stark contrast between Porcius Festus and Felix as far as their disposition, their ability to rule, and their roles in all of this is concerned. But one of the things that we do want to note is that why Felix was, according to this text, why his governorship ceased. He was governor for 2 years, the text tells us, after Paul had been imprisoned here in Caesarea. But what we didn't talk about is that he was called back to Rome. Felix, his shenanigans got him in trouble with the Caesar who appointed him. And he would have had terrible consequences to pay were it not for a brother that was in a position at that time of political power and wealth. And so that's why Felix was called back to Rome. But I want to call your attention to this statement, verse 27, desiring to gain favor with the Jews. Felix's shenanigans with the Jews. Keep in mind that the events that were going on in Palestine at this time that required Rome to be there was that there was unrest among the Jews, and there was uprisings among the Jews. And even in Caesarea, there were uprisings among the Jews. And so this relationship between those who were Roman governors and the people of the Jews was not always a peaceful one. Now, we've talked about the centurions and the captains and the place of the Roman army in this area to keep peace. And we've talked about how that Cornelius and Claudius Lysias, the captain that we've been discussing, how that they seem to have some kind of a favorable position among the Jews. But their efforts to keep peace were involved in winning the hearts of the Jews through benevolent means and things such as that. But you might raise the question, why did they even need to seek the favor of the Jews? Much of it was because of some of the things that these Roman emperors and these Roman governors had done. Now, we know, and we've talked about Aquila and Priscilla, how that they were Jews and they were cast out of Rome because of this very thing. So here's an effort on behalf of Caesar. But when you think about Felix and his governorship in the land of Palestine, particularly in the city of Caesarea, he'd had some headbuttings with the Jews, and many Jews had been slaughtered by Felix. And so you can see why that would gain the disfavor of the Roman emperor, who wants this thing stopped, this insurrection among the Jews. He wants that stopped. And here's Felix down there that's supposed to be in a role of peacekeeping, and what's he done? He slaughtered a bunch of them. So he gets called back to Rome, and Porcius Festus then becomes his replacement. Now, we're going to note as we get into the 25th chapter that Porcius Festus inherited a whole lot more from Felix than just Paul. He inherited a whole lot of the problems that Felix had caused. And so when you notice in the 25th chapter, what appears to be reluctance on Festus' part to make a decision about Paul. You'll notice in verse 9 it tells us of the 25th chapter, but Festus, desiring to gain favor with the Jews, answered Paul and said, "Wilt thou go up to Jerusalem, there be judged of these things before me." Now Paul had already been to Jerusalem. He knew what the problem was. And he knows that there's not going to be any justice in Jerusalem. But notice, if you will, that though Festus' intentions appear to be much better than Felix, he has inherited not only this problem with Paul, but he's inherited this disrest from the Jews. So you see again why he, like Felix, in that respect, would desire to gain favor of the Jews. Randy?
Given the general requirement of the Caesar to the governor is to keep the peace. Along comes these Jews accusing Paul of insurrection.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've just got a lot of elements in this mix that make a real bad situation for Festus. And Felix has contributed to that considerably. And we want to take note of that. As we conclude our thoughts here with the 24th chapter. So, desiring to gain favor with the Jews, Felix left Paul in bonds. So, it makes it appear then that Felix is doing this because he has some sympathy for the Jews. No, he has no sympathy for the Jews. He's already slaughtered a bunch of them, but he's in trouble himself. And so what we find in this is an effort on his part to appease the Jews, to try to settle some of the unrest that he himself has been party to. So just want to make a note of that before we get into the 25th chapter and before we get into the questions, even on the 24th chapter. All right. Acts chapter 24, questions, is where we are. And I just laid mine out. There they are. So that we would have them. Acts chapter 24, questions. Well, before we get to that, I failed to put this on the board too. I've got some catching up I want to do. We know that old Felix has been rattled by the things that Paul has to say. The text tells us that he was terrified. Now, I want you to know that Felix is well aware of his history. He knows what he's done. He knows the kind of moral situation that he's in and the atrocities that he has wrought among even the people of the Jews. He knows his corruptness, as we see in this text. He desired that some of Paul's friends might bribe him into releasing Paul, which was typical of this wicked governor. And so now Paul has reasoned with him for some time concerning righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come. Now, Felix has got a choice to make. Do you think in this discourse that Paul has taught him what he needs to do? Well, yeah, there are a lot of things he needs to change, but not just change to make his life better, but to save his soul. Now, when Paul presents to him that there is a judgment, there's a God that you'll answer to, it tells us that he's terrified, and look, if you will, at the choice that he has before him. If he does what Paul says, then what about all the money that he's going to have, his income? You know, I've found over the years that sometimes people get real sensitive about their things that relate to their income. You hit folks in the pocketbook, and that's a source of real trouble sometimes. And it was no doubt the case with Felix. If I obey the gospel, then there goes my source of income. But not just that. If I obey the gospel, what about my place as Felix, the appointed governor of this district? You see, all the office, all that goes with that, that's down the tubes too. He'd have to lay aside his robe, his crown, his prestige, his power. And think about Paul. Where was he? Were some of these things involved in that same equation when Paul made his decision to obey the gospel? Well, he wasn't guilty of bribes or accepting bribes or offering bribes. Paul was one that sought to serve God. But as far as his place and power among the Jews, when Paul became a Christian, what happened to all of that? Those who had been promoting and elevating Paul and praising Paul from the Jewish background, when he obeyed the gospel, what did they then want to do to him? Well, they wanted to kill him. So, pardon me?
Chapter 26, they thought he's crazy.
Yeah, they thought he's a crazy man. Yeah. So, here's Paul. He's not ignorant of the very things he's presenting to Felix as far as personal application is concerned. He knows where this is going. His place of power and prestige and influence, his friends would become his enemies. And so here's where Felix is. Now here's something that Paul didn't have to deal with that Felix is going to have to address. We've talked about Felix and Drusilla, how that they're involved in an adulterous affair, and so this can't continue, and we've talked about that from Ezra chapter 10, and somebody said, just so we know, Ezra chapter 10 is not dealing with adultery. Okay? But I want you to read Ezra chapter 10 because it is dealing with unlawful marriages. And let me ask you, is adultery an unlawful marriage? Well, yeah, it is. So the unlawful marriages that have been formed in Ezra chapter 10 were unlawful for a different reason, but they were still unlawful. Now the demands of repentance for those unlawful marriages, what was it in Ezra chapter 10?
Had to stop being with those people.
Had to stop them. Now, what about old Felix? Can he just say, well, I'm sorry I did all those things, and for all these multiple wives that I've had in the past, and all the multiple husbands that my wife has had, but we'll just stop that and we'll stay with each other. That fix the problem? Well, no more than those in Israel, if they said, well, we'll just stop intermarrying with these heathen nations, but we'll keep these heathen wives that we've got. And I use that term in context, you understand, these idolatrous nations. So I want you to see that. Now, old Felix is not ignorant. When Paul reasons of righteousness and self-control and the judgment to come, Felix is making some personal applications. Why do you think he's terrified?
It might be true.
Yeah. So here we go. Now, I'll tell you what, preaching the gospel is not always dripped from the ceiling, ooey-gooey preaching on love all the time. Sometimes it's preaching on subjects that are personal and are hard in terms of application. And Felix is not an ignorant man. He sees that. He may be corrupt to the core. He may be ungodly and immoral to the core, but he's not dumb. He knows that what Paul is preaching to him demands that he change a whole lot of big important things in his life. And I want to suggest this to you. When you're studying with somebody and you reach the point where you know that individual knows and understands the truth. All right? Let me reiterate that. When you're studying with somebody and you know that person knows and understands the truth, don't be afraid to ask the question that Ananias posed to Saul. Why tarriest thou? Arise and be baptized and wash away thy sins, calling on the name of the Lord. Now let me suggest this to you, my friends and brethren, that if there is an issue in somebody's life where when they know and understand the truth and you pose that question and there's hesitancy, or the answer is, no, I won't do that, then what you have taught that individual, number one, there are things that they just don't want to do. Or number two, they're doing things they just don't want to stop. Now the bottom line is, when you ask that question and the answer is no, the bottom line reason is they don't want to. Isn't that simple? Don't want to. Don't want to obey. Now that's where old Felix is. You can be terrified right down to your bootstraps. But if you're terrified and you're not willing to do anything about it, what does that say about you? You don't want to. You just accept the consequence.
I guess it's interesting, as you talk about this, they often say, and I've heard the expression, probably you have too, the response to fear, we often do one or two things, is fight or flight.
Uh-huh.
And like Paul, you know, in terms of his fear, he fought for the rest of his life, you know, for the cause of Christ. But you do see in Felix, in terms of making that choice, he chooses
the
flight, and then he chooses to go, just go away.
That's right. When I have a convenient time, when it's appropriate, the time is more easy, then I'll do something. I don't believe that Felix had any intentions of doing anything about it. Because the things that he held on to, the things that he loved, he was not willing to give up. And the things that Paul was demanding of him, he was not willing to commit to. And that's just the way that that was. Often that's the case with us. Yes. Yes. You know, we might underscore that statement about being very selfish. Sin is a very selfish choice. All of it. It's all selfish. And that's where he was.
But the thing I was going to ask is, you said that he had killed his slaughter, is the word I think you used.
That's the word.
Lots of the Jews. Were these Jews that were criminals? Or
not necessarily. No. Keep in mind the place that he's in. Sometimes when we think about the role that some of these governors had to keep peace, you can seek the means that Cornelius sought, you can seek the means that Sergius Paulus sought, or you can seek the means like Felix. You can say, well, I'm going to try to do the best I can to be good to these people. I'm going to appease them in that way. Or you can say, I'm going to suppress the insurrection by killing them. They will do what I tell them.
How did he get away with that?
Well, he didn't. He did for a while.
He didn't, but I mean, even like for the time being, it seems to me like, how could he do that and everybody not know what he was doing?
Well, look at our current world. I mean, it's the world we live in.
Well, the thing is that the regard of the Romans for the lives of people that were not Romans was not any more than that of a dog.
Go ahead.
I mean, when Herodias said that she wanted John's head, the king said, we'll go chop off his head.
Yeah.
Well, that's all there was to it, as far as he was concerned.
Yeah.
It's just that the person, he's just going to chop his head off, and there you go, you got his head.
Yeah.
Deal.
Yeah.
Same thing with Jesus. Just so that there wouldn't be a riot, he says, okay, well, we'll kill him.
Yeah.
Even though he said three times, there's no reason to kill him.
Yeah.
But they said, well, we want him killed. He said, okay, whatever.
Yeah, go.
And he released the murderer.
Yeah.
So their regard for human life was only for the human life of Romans.
Yeah, it's hard for us to conceive of that, but that's true. Randy?
And there was no higher authority within Palestine at this time than the governor.
Yeah.
He only had to answer to Caesar. And the only thing Caesar cared about was, don't have a riot, don't have an insurrection, just keep control of the people. That's all you can. He, I don't care how you do it.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah, that's about it.
Now, one of the things that the Jews realized is they could send people back to Rome and be able to get the ear of Caesar's advisors and be able to plant stories about what's going on back there and be able to undermine the governor's power that way.
Which I think is what happened with Felix. He was found out, and Caesar recalled him. And he would have been in big-time trouble if it hadn't been for his brother.
That was the power that the Jews had over Pilate.
Yeah.
They were saying, you don't want Caesar to hear. There's some, you're letting some guy run around here claiming to be king.
Yeah. That's right. So that explains the part. It's hard for us to wrap our minds around an environment that is so corrupt. Such as this. But there are places in our world where it's similar. Not here, but in some places in the world it is. Okay? Pardon me?
I said, I don't know, our government's pretty corrupt.
Well, that's another story. Well, not like it was then. Now, what I want you to note here is that Felix had to do some, as Richard says, cogitating on this. He had to think this through and count the cost. Now, brethren, we do too. And people that we study with do too. Count the cost. And you're familiar with this passage, Luke chapter 14, beginning in verse 25, as he talks about a man who has an army and he's got to consider whether he can win, and a man who builds a tower, whether or not he's got the money to finish it. And we understand that principle of counting the cost. And when you're studying with somebody the gospel of Christ, you can just take that to the bank. They're going to count the cost. No pun intended. And if there's things that obeying the gospel is going to require them to change, that they don't want to change, then you're not going to be successful. that we're going to be studying about that in the parable of the sower on in our Wednesday night class before too long, I expect. Okay? All right? So we got a choice here to make. Look at it. He can choose to do what Paul tells him to do or instructs him to do, and the result of that will be the salvation of his soul, because Christ is the author of eternal salvation to them that obey him. Now, we want to hammer that home with somebody that we're studying with. Obedience is crucial. It'll save your soul. You can be baptized into Christ and enjoy the forgiveness of your sin, or you can just keep going like you are and continue as governor. You can judge others. You can have this position of power and all of that that goes with it. But there's a consequence. And here's what's rattled old Felix. Paul's been preaching to him about the judgment to come. You see, Felix, you're governor, all right, and you make judgments about people's lives, and you have the privilege, as Richard has pointed out, to take lives and not give it another thought. No value to human life, unless they're Romans, you see. That's what you have the power to do, but you've got one that will judge you, and he will do so without respect to person. Now, here's what he said. Go thy way for this time, and when I have a convenient season, I will call thee unto me. Randy Childs, you read from the New American Standard Translation. I don't believe that uses the expression convenient season. It uses another expression.
24:25?
Yes.
But as he was discussing righteousness, self-control, the judgment to come, he was being frightened and said, go away from the present. When I find time, I will say.
When I find time, yeah. You ever said that? You ever heard that? When I have the time, yeah. Yeah, we've all got good intentions. I wish I had a nickel for everybody that I had asked the question. You got an opportunity through the week where we can get together and have a Bible study. And I'll call you when I have the time. I know when some folks say, don't call me, I'll call you. Never going to happen. Because it's just not that important. And it wasn't to Felix. Now, one of the things we want to note, he lived and died in sin. We have no record of a time ever coming when he obeyed the gospel. And somebody that makes that argument are likely, unless you can rattle them from it, to pursue that same course. Now, where would you be in a decision like that? We've all had to make that choice, haven't we? We've all had to kind of choose the kind of life that we want to live. And I dare say, brethren, that when we choose to obey the gospel, those choices continue to occur in our lives on an everyday basis as we choose whom we will serve, as Joshua put it to those people of Israel in Joshua chapter 24 in verse 15. Now here's the key. We studied this in our Wednesday night class. But seek ye first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. We make a choice what's first in our lives. Now to our worksheet. Any questions or comments over the text? All right. Verses 1 and 2, Acts chapter 24. What's in it? Betty Jo, can you tell me that, please? Verses 1 and 2.
And Ananias, the high priest, came out the elders and the orators of the priests.
Yep, that's him.
And gave evidence to the governor against Paul. And then he started talking to him and, I guess, kind of flattering him in a sense.
He did. Yeah, he told him what a fine fellow he was. And, of course, we know that a lot of that wasn't true, but be that as it may. Chapter 24, verses 2 through 9. Chris?
Tertullus argues his case before Felix.
Yep, that's what he does. And he accuses Paul of some things. We'll look at that in a moment. Verses 10 through 21. A rather lengthy context here. Richard?
Paul's defense.
It is. And quite lengthy, as we said. We've talked about that. We'll have some questions on that in a little bit. Linda, how about chapter 24, 22, and 23?
Okay, that's when Felix says that if he wants to wait till Lysias can come down.
All right, we'll just wait. We're kicking the can down the road, aren't we? We just wait. All right. Verses 24 through 27. Lisa.
Felix decided to leave Paul in jail.
That's right. That's right. That's what he did. Tell me about Ananias, Lynn.
He was the high priest from Jerusalem who persecuted Paul and followed Paul to Caesarea.
That's right. Was this the same Ananias we read about in Acts 9 and Acts 22?
No,
different man. Completely different man. Tertullus. Rachel Simmons over here, please.
He's the lawyer that came with the high priest.
All right. He's a good talker. All right. And then tell me about Felix. Eve?
Governor of Judea.
He was. And then Claudius Lysias. Jenny, tell me about that man. You knew that was going to be yours.
He's the chief captain that saved Paul on several occasions, according to the Jews, great violence. And Felix delayed the sentencing of Paul until he could hear from
him. That's right. Now, you mentioned that he was a chief captain. How many does a chief captain oversee? 1,000 soldiers. That's right. Real important fellow. That's going to be important to us in the study of the next chapter. Okay, it's the reason I want you to be aware of that. The pomp and circumstance that pertains to Festus and his interrogation in particular before Agrippa involved some chief captains. So what we want to see is that was a great big to-do. A lot of important figureheads were present there. Drusilla. What can you tell me about Drusilla, Jim? Please.
Felix's wife, but was also a Jew, and daughter of Herod Agrippa the First.
All right. Was she a very nice lady? No, she was not a very nice lady. Okay, we'll talk more about her. And then Porcius Festus. Tell me about Porcius Festus. Becky.
In a brief few words, successor to Felix according to Felix.
All right, well, that's right. He's successor to Felix. Question number one. Who came down from Jerusalem to accuse Paul before Felix, James?
That would be Ananias with certain elders and Tertullus.
All right. In particular, we want to focus our attention here on Tertullus because he's their spokesman. And then number two, how did Tertullus begin to commend Felix? Yes, Randy?
It's significant who didn't come down.
All right.
Who would have been the ancient Jews that originally accused Paul?
Yeah. Yeah, there's some mention of them in the next chapter, but no, they did not come down to accuse him here. That's right. How did Tertullus begin to commend Felix? Kim, tell me about it.
He said, "Through you we enjoy peace and prosperity and are thankful that you are so great."
Isn't that marvelous? Yeah, well, he wasn't all that great, but this is Tertullus' speech. Carolyn, what did Tertullus ask for?
He wants to try Paul.
Yes. Yes. Hear us by thy clemency a few words. Now, it might be notable here that has been mentioned who Tertullus is. He's an orator. He's known for his...
Not few words.
Yeah, that's not few words. Careful now. I hear you thinking over there. Number four. What did Tertullus charge Paul with? Randy Childs, please.
He charged him with being a real pest.
Yeah.
And until he stirs up dissension among the Jews throughout the world, the ringleader of the Second Nazarene.
Yes, and one other thing. He profaned the temple, desecrated the temple. Well, that just simply, none of those things were true. Number five, how did the Jews respond to these charges against Paul, Eve? Yeah. Can you imagine that? Here's this great big orator that's notable for his ability to speak, and he's making these charges, and everybody's over there in the yaysayers saying, yeah, that's right, whatever he says. All right. Number six, what did Felix do before Paul spoke? Denise?
He gave permission to Paul to speak.
He did. Now, we might think that's a small thing, but let's consider here who Paul is and who Felix is and the setting that's going on here. He's the governor, and so he's an appointee of the Roman Caesar, and so consequently he's exercising his authority. You can't speak unless I tell you to. So that's what he did.
He didn't actually verbalize it, though.
No. Yeah, I gave him the nod. All right. Number seven. How long had it been since Paul went up to Jerusalem? Anyway, somebody. 12 days. More than 12 days. Now, the thing that's so significant about that, not more than 12 days. Yeah, okay. Not more than 12. That's what it says right here in my notes. Not more than 12 days. And so he gave an account of every single day. And we'll look at that in just a little bit. How long had it been since Paul went up to Jerusalem? Number two, or letter A. Why was this so important? James?
It establishes a timeline.
It establishes a timeline. Now, those of you in our Tuesday morning clients, certainly by now, you know the importance of a timeline. You're establishing events in order. And so timelines are crucial. They're very important to study and accuracy of understanding.
I think also the thing that they need to understand is that Paul has been, as you might say, out of town for quite a while. And he's just now coming back to Jerusalem. In 12 days, there's no way for him to stir up insurrection and riot and things like that.
No. I
mean, his influence has not been in Jerusalem.
That's right. That's right. He was preaching among the Gentiles.
Less than 12 days because he's been in Caesarea for a while.
Well, he's been in Caesarea for 5 days. And at least 5 days.
But it adds to Rick's point.
Yeah.
He's just been accused of being a rabble-rouser. And everywhere he goes, he stirs up trouble. And he's saying, I haven't had time to do anything.
Now, he can account for his whereabouts every single day.
The accusations of Tertullus are so over the top.
Yes.
They're extreme. And by contrast, here Paul is laying out in a very rational, scholarly, reasonable way that an attorney would use, actually, and shows how much more believable his defense is than the accusations of
Tertullus. Well, that's right. And this was his custom, even when he went in among those of the synagogue of the Jews. And, of course, Tertullus, no doubt, was a notorious, that's not the right word. He was a very popular speaker among the Jews, and recognized so in this text. Carolyn?
I have a question. Back in chapter 21, when he talked about his truth that, okay, so they suggested that to him. The next day he purified himself along with them. And then where we are in the text, he's saying he was completing that. Was that a 7 day?
Yes.
Thing? Because that would have been all 7 days plus the five he's now been in Caesarea. That's the entire time he's been at the temple worshiping, or whatever the procedures were, the ceremonies.
Okay.
Not,
okay, we're going to account from the time that he came into Jerusalem involved in this defense in these 12 days.
And it wasn't, I mean,
it includes that 7 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how would he, because it says the brethren received him, and there's just a day or two of the following day they received him, and then they said you should do this vow, and so the following day he did the vow.
That's right. You can account for every moment of his time, and you'll see that right there. Okay.
Kind of wonder who the lawyer is, Tertullus or Paul, because Paul's given a better defense as a lawyer than a lawyer.
Well, you know, sometimes we think because a fellow doesn't have a certain title that he's ignorant. And Paul was everything but ignorant. He was schooled in the teaching of the law by Gamaliel. That's how he was brought up, at the feet of Gamaliel. So as far as being qualified to serve as a lawyer, don't discount Paul. His understanding of the law was equal or better than Tertullus.
He also had the Holy Spirit.
That is true. Now this chart, I boil this down from some of our previous studies, and I want you to note he's accounting now for every day of his time among those in Jerusalem. Here's the day that he arrived, chapter 21. Here's the meeting with the elders, Carolyn, that you talked about. Here's the beginning of the purification ceremony on day 3, and then days 3 through 9. Here's your 7 days that you were talking about. And then here is he coming out of the temple. He's attacked and arrested, brought before the Sanhedrin on day 10, Acts 22 and on into 23. Day 11, revealing of this plot that Paul becomes aware of. And then he is on day 12, the day that he arrived in Caesarea, as he's been delivered there by Claudius, Claudius Lysias. I almost did it. Yeah, Claudius Lysias. And so now he's been in prison there in Caesarea for these days. What, five more days? He's been there waiting for these folks to come. So, yeah, he's accounting for every day of his time. And so as far as these accusations are concerned, there's just not been a time frame in which they could possibly have occurred. Now, why had Paul gone up to Jerusalem? This is crucial. It wasn't an accident, and it certainly wasn't a surprise that, Paul's in Jerusalem. How come he's here? Why did he go?
Pentecost.
Yes, he wanted to be there on the day of Pentecost, but there's a couple of reasons, I think, that supersede that. He had a delivery to make. Yes, you remember he's been circling up north of the Mediterranean Sea, east and north of the Mediterranean Sea, Asia, and on up into Macedonia and down into Achaia, and he's been collecting. Of course, I think the indication of 1 Corinthians 16 is that he's also been in parts of Galatia, or at least has written them. And what we know is that he has accumulated a very sizable collection. And I want to underscore that, very sizable collection, because of the time element that's involved in the preparing of that contribution and of the numerous churches that have been supplying it. And we know that he commends those in Macedonia for giving above and beyond their ability. And then the need for Paul to have men to accompany him to Jerusalem to distribute these funds. And then, too, when you consider the size of the church in Jerusalem and the circumstances involved in that, I think it's more than just a safe conclusion. It's an accurate conclusion that Paul has come to deliver a tidy sum to his brethren, to bring alms unto those in Jerusalem. Now, I find it interesting that in this discourse of his defense, the bringing of alms to my brethren in Jerusalem, he's not necessarily identifying brethren in Christ, though we know that is the case, because that's who it was collected for. It was collected for the needy among the saints in Jerusalem. So this circumvents any other occasion. The opportunity to be there on Pentecost would be an opportunity to preach, as we've seen on other occasions. But what we note here is he has a delivery to make. He's come with these funds. And there are several passages, of course, that we've discussed in relation to that. How did Paul respond to the charges made against him? James.
To sum it up, he said, "I serve God."
That's right. He denied those charges. And I find it interesting, too, from this standpoint. Paul said concerning these charges, "of which they cannot prove." Now, well, that's going to be a very legitimate argument when we get to his defense before Festus. Because before Festus, he says, "If I've done anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die." Now, in order to establish a cause worthy of death, there had to be proof offered, evidence. And Paul said they don't have it.
And I think it's interesting to note that again, 24:18-19, he says, "And where are those Jews that tried to kill me? They didn't come."
That's right. Yeah, they didn't come to offer any evidence. And they don't go to Caesar either to offer evidence. So, yes, he said these things are false and they can't prove them. Number 10, what did Paul openly confess?
I do belong to the way.
I do belong to the way. And we want to categorize it that. The way. How would we identify that? The way is what? Randy?
Jesus said, "I am the way."
Yes.
The way.
Yes.
The
yes. In fact, we note that Paul served the God, he said, of our fathers, believing all things according to the law and the prophets. That's the way. Now, Lisa, you made a comment a while ago about Paul being a better lawyer than Tertullus. To be a lawyer, now we want to note that our term lawyer is not the equivalent of their term lawyer. Our term lawyer, we're talking about an attorney that knows the civil codes and all of this kind of stuff. When we think of a lawyer in New Testament times, we're thinking of those who knew the law of Moses. They knew the law of Moses, and they could serve to argue because they knew what the law said. And of course, the law of Moses was supposed to be that which was argued in Jewish courts, the Jewish Sanhedrin court. It was to be represented by what Moses said. And did Paul know the law as good or better than Tertullus did? Absolutely. So our point is a valid one. He said, I serve the Lord. I serve the way according to the law and the prophets. All right, Randy, did I see your hand? All right. Number 11. What is the hope that Paul refers to? What is the hope that Paul refers to? Rachel, back in the back. That's right. There's going to be a resurrection of the dead. Now, this is a loaded question. Did the Jews believe in that? Some of them did, yes. We have them divided, and Paul has used that to his advantage there in chapter 23. And I want you to note, we're going to come across that again. I've got some charts on that, and we've already seen some charts on that, how that becomes essentially the theme of Paul's preaching. And do you find it interesting at all that in these, what I will call civil cases, that Paul is engaged with before Felix and before Festus and before Agrippa, that he seizes upon every single one of them to preach the resurrection? Why do you suppose he did that?
Because he was an eyewitness.
He was an eyewitness, but let's go a step further.
The resurrection is the reason why any of us should have any desire, well, the reason any of us, well, many of us, want to do what's right, because we know there's a day coming when God's going to judge everyone.
All right.
And because of that, we don't want to end up on the wrong side.
That's right.
And that, while some people would say, well, you should still want to do what's right because it's right. That's what you strive for. That's what you try and grow towards. But initially, that was the argument that Paul made on Mars Hill. There's going to be a day of judgment.
All right.
This guy who was resurrected from the dead, he's going to be judging everyone.
All right, that's right. And otherwise, it's just a philosophy.
Yes.
It's just a philosophy. Now, Paul was not presenting philosophy. He's presenting this as fact because, as Randy said, he saw it. Now, in view of that fact, here's the means of salvation. You don't have to be unprepared on that occasion. There's going to be a resurrection, both of the righteous and the unrighteous, the just and the unjust, the good and the bad. And God's going to be the judge on that occasion. And this is the hope that Paul is referring to. And I think that it's more than just by accident that Paul uses these settings of what we will call a public hearing to preach the gospel. He's not bashful about this. He's preaching the gospel. And perhaps we need to make a note of that. Okay? Any questions or comments? All right, next question, number 12. Number 12. What does Paul say about his conscience? Pardon me?
Blameless.
That's right. I've done everything that I know to do that's right, according to the law and the prophets. Blameless.
He says, the American Standard, in a way that conscience is void of offense against not only God, but man also.
That's right. That's right. So, as far as Paul's perspective is concerned, there's no reason for him to be before Felix. Number 13, what was Paul doing when these Jews came upon him? Now, we need to identify what Jews. When he was arrested in the city of Jerusalem, takes us back to chapter 21. What was Paul doing when these Jews came upon him?
Inside
of Pardon me?
Inside of Christ.
No. What was he doing?
Bringing alms to the nation.
Well, yes, but when they found him, where was he? He's coming out of the temple. Yeah. What's he been doing in the temple? Well, no. In the temple, he hadn't been causing any problem. He'd been doing those things that the Jews did. He's engaged in the process of purification with these men that the elders have recommended. And so he's not doing any kind of thing that's wrong. Was he causing any kind of uproar? I see where you guys are picking on me now. The very next part of that question. No, he was not causing an uproar. Number 14. What did Paul say about the Jews from Asia? Jews from Asia. Rick Chipper, tell me about those folks.
They've been following them around and causing trouble with
them. That's right. Now, they've been following him around, but there's one place they haven't followed him to. Where's that?
Court.
Here, court. If they had anything on me, they ought to be here, and they're not here. So these Jews from Asia. Now, I find it interesting in a lot of ways that here's Paul in the city of Caesarea before this Roman governor, and these Jews from Asia, and if you look on your map, that's some distance away. And they have been down here in Jerusalem stirring everybody up. But when Paul is over here in Caesarea before this Roman court, where are the Jews from Asia? Well, they're not there. They're not there. And if they had anything that they could prove against me, they ought to be here. And they're not there. Number 15. Yes.
Maybe they passed south of hunger because they had
Well, good point. That's probably right. James?
You know, maybe we think about it, those Jews are being smart because they made false accusations. They're going to stand in front of David today like Felix and then be found out to be false witnesses. He could point the finger at them and say, cut their heads off right now. So
well, yeah.
They're being very smart, not people.
Well, that's true. That's true. All right. Well, we'll have to stop there. Because the bell went off. And we'll start with that next time. Be sure you read Acts chapter 25. Paul before Festus. All right.